Greetings, fellow investigators, and welcome back to our video podcast, Into the Darkness, where my friends and I play the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I'm your host, Tom Rayleigh. Our campaign is Beyond the Mountains of Madness, and we're about to begin Episode 9. It was written by Janice Hill and Charles Ingen, along with others who are listed in the credits. Our GM for this campaign is Sean Little, and Simon Ward will be giving us the recap. There seems to be a wolf amongst the sheep. Players are ready. Let's begin our journey into the darkness. Simon?
We pass Cuba on the 15th of September, 1933, and we spend the next few days doing our classes. On the 18th, we enter the Panama Canal, and we spend the next few days passing through it. We stop at Panama City to get supplies, mostly various types of liquor. We should be experts in making cocktails soon. We head south into the Pacific Ocean on the 21st. We hit a little rough seas, but nothing too serious. We cross the equator and we become shellbacks on the 24th. But on the 25th, the ship's refrigerators are sabotaged and there's evidence acid was used. A quarter of the 12 tons of food carried is completely ruined. Quickly following, a few days later on, about the 28th, the dogs have to be destroyed after being poisoned with strychnine. Again, no clues have been left to reveal who's behind it. We check the holds, and in the heavy equipment section, some of the oxygen tanks have been messed with. Each hold takes about a day to search. In hold 3, which we were on the 1st of October, where we used to keep the radio spares, some of the photographic chemicals have been disturbed. In hold 2, where most of our aeroplane supplies, amongst some fuel drums, we find a coil of fuse and some blasting caps had been hidden amongst them. Somebody is making a bomb.
Thanks, Sparky. Simon? So you have found the makings, you believe, of an explosive device.
Yeah.
With that information.
The crew doesn't know we're down here, so we can't really spread it about. I think we should leave it, like I say, set up some form of ambush for when they come to set it up. But it means somebody's spending days at a time sitting down in a hold.
Well, should we tell Starkweather and Moore?
Yeah, but like I say, the crew don't know we're down here, and the crew don't know we're searching, so we're going to have to get word to them.
Could I just ask something? I'm a former Royal Engineers officer.
Yes.
So I take it that, I mean, you know, my duties would include EOD, bomb disposal, make safe for transport, that sort of thing. How sophisticated does the bomb look? Does it look like it's been made by someone who knows what they're doing, or does it look like someone's just jury-rigged an explosive together?
For you, I mean, how many years were in the military?
I am 48 years old. I was in the military for about 20 years.
I would say, based on your knowledge and training, without doing a roll, this is not a... Do you like somebody has...
I lost you for a bit.
We lost you.
You said it was not...
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Sophisticated device. It's not a sophisticated device.
It's not a sophisticated device.
It looks like somebody has the bare bones of knowledge of how an explosive device would work. And it probably could be done in a way that it would function, but it's not tidy.
And they've used pre-made things like the detonators and the blasting caps.
That's right. Yes. Okay.
I'll just say, too, I'm not opposed to Sparky's idea. I think that's a good idea. But you're right. I think that means someone's going to have to be down here in a dark room for hours upon hours upon hours. For who knows how long.
We've got 10 days, I think, until we reach dry land.
Yeah. I think it is important, too, that nobody knows about it except maybe Stark Weather and Moore.
Oh, definitely. We can't let the crew know. But the thing is, it hasn't been assembled, and they won't assemble it until the last moment because it increases the chance of it being found. So I reckon if we have someone down here about a day before we dock, and during the time period while we actually dock, that's the time it'll probably be done. Light the fuse and then get off the ship, disappear off into the pool.
You know what? I don't think that we should tell Starkweather. Starkweather has a way of losing all control and running around screaming. Maybe we should tell Moore and tell him what we're planning, that we're trying to trap the...
I don't know, anyone got any woodworking skills? Carpentry or something?
No, not really. Mr. Pepper can't figure out... rig up a trap of some sort that would, well, I keep going back to it, but that would coat the person in paint so that it would immediately be obvious that this was the person who tried to get in here to get to their bomb.
What about the, just putting a little paint can on top of the door?
Well, the only other problem with that is that somebody else could just come in here because they've got business in here.
And we're at sea, and if the ship just goes like that, it just might not be able.
That's true. I forgot about that. The other question, too, is if the person who's down here, if the guy comes in and is ready to detonate, what's that person supposed to do? We're gonna shoot him on sight, or try to capture him? Or?
Very likely he would run, but there's also something else. We went through all of the holds, and we were supplied with lights to do it and everything. There's also no reason to believe that the guy already knows that we found this stuff, because probably the general crew knew that we were searching the holds.
The crew weren't told us what we were doing. We were doing this all behind the crew's back.
Do you think it's a member of the actual crew, or do you think somebody's still being... or somebody's stowing away?
I still think that it's highly unlikely that it's somebody who is a member of the crew that has been a member of the crew for years. It would have to be a newcomer or somebody on the science team.
Yeah. Okay, so with that information, you know, if we can get a, you know, a full roster of names, I know it's going to take a while to go through. You know, if we can narrow it down, I know there's, what, 90, 100 people on here, 80 or whatever. If we can start narrowing it, even if we narrow down to 20 people, at least we have, you know, somewhere to look.
Well, I think we should start from the bottom up. The lowest ranking crew members upwards, because the lower ranking the crew members are, the easier it would be to get passage on the ship without having to prove that they have skills or things. For the less skilled positions, like working in the laundry room or something, you need less in the way of references. And I mean, if you're an able seaman, they're going to want to know which ships you've served on previously. They might check up those references, especially on an expedition like this. But if you're doing the laundry or just serving the food, then you've got more chance of getting on.
Does it also seem like to you that the most likely time that the person's coming down here would be on their off time? When they're supposed to be asleep, or... that way they wouldn't be leaving their crew duties or whatever they're supposed to be doing.
Could you do an idea roll, Dr. Lindenbrook?
Showa. Where's my other dice? I got to dump out a whole thing of dice to find it. There. I got 34, which is a pass.
Okay. this is minor thought comes to you as well, that these holds are not open. That the reason they're not lit is because nobody's in them. Nobody is wandering them, checking them on a regular basis, except very occasionally. So nobody should be down here except on scheduled inspection times. That's it.
Okay. But obviously the person wouldn't, they wouldn't, unless, does one person do the inspection?
Various. It depends on who's on shift at the time that the inspection takes place.
Would it normally be more than one person, or?
It would normally be two.
Okay. So it's probably not happening at that moment, unless the two people are in cahoots with one another. We still don't know if it's just one person or two, or the whole effing crew might be.
Mr. Lindenbrook, I seem to remember a while back you had messaged one of your secretaries, I think, to ask for a list of the crew from the previous expedition.
From the one, that's true, didn't I?
Did we ever compare the names to see if there was a crossover?
Yes, there were three, remember, and they've all disappeared.
It's just those three names?
That's correct, isn't it? GM?
Oh, yes, that's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Brewer, Wicks, and Grimes.
Yeah. All of them disappeared the day before.
You have heard them mentioned a couple of times during the trip by other crew members.
Have they said
they it? They said they seemed like... Sorry?
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, that's all right. No, it's just you do notice that among other conversations among regular crew members, the three have come up in conversation and thought anything suspicious of them at the time, and everyone seems to feel that they just got scared.
Ah,
okay. That's the impression of the crew right now.
Well, they certainly would have had reason to be scared since they'd done it once before. And it's a mystery. It's a mystery wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in a ship made out of metal,
wrapped in a delicious chocolate coating.
Well, we could do that thing where we have a room and we invite each person in one at a time, and we tell them that we know that they did it, and see which one of them goes.
We got 10 days, we can make a fun game out of it.
It could very well come to that, I think.
Well, I still
let's keep that one on a back burner, because that might have to be the way we do this.
I still think that one way to do it would be to question the crew as to whether the other members of the crew were where they were supposed to be and when they were supposed to be. But I changed my mind. Maybe this person probably doing this in the middle of the night, probably in the wee hours of the night when nobody would really pay that close attention.
I don't suppose any of these doors have the ability to be locked, right?
Well, the access to the holds is through a gigantic door that will be winched open so that things should be lowered inside. The second access is a small one-man square. Well, that's a unit of measurement, one-man square. A man-sized door, another similar hatch that has to be winched, like lifted open, latched, and then a stair going down. There are like cotter pins, if you know what that is, kind of that kind of thing holding them shut. But they're certainly not, they're not generally locked.
So there's no like side door that locks in, like a hatch?
No, it's access from above.
From above. That's even weirder.
And are you saying it takes a machine to lift the door?
The large door. Giant hatch that they drop things in with a crane. Yeah. And then there's another man-sized door beside it.
But that also, you have to open it up and then climb down the ladder?
Yes.
Holy bananas. How could anybody get away with doing that without being noticed? Guys, what if somebody's in here already? What if we've searched the room, but we didn't open up every box and look in it?
What? I know this is a bit of a long shot, but what about the fuselages, the airplanes?
Like somebody's hiding in the airplane.
Yeah.
Are we still down in the hold?
Muted. Muted. Yes. Yes, you are. Unless you've chosen to leave yet.
Let's go see if we can find any place in here where a person could hide.
Mm.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
But, well, if we find a bedding roll and some cans of food in one of the planes, then we know we're onto something, don't we?
Yeah. So can we do that? Can we take and make a really, you know, any place that looks like you could hide a person inside of it?
Yeah, I mean, the hold that you're in is finite in size. It's not...
Right.
It's a box. You can certainly, between all of you, walk and search as one and be able to determine it. And if in only a few minutes, that there's no really any place someone can hide. It would take you maybe 20 minutes.
All right, so... That's probably out, yeah.
Mm.
So the trick is, how does a person get in here without being seen? Because I imagine they don't have any business opening up the hold in the first place to come down here except for the inspection.
So it's got to be the little hatch.
Yeah, yeah. There's no way they can open
it. And I would imagine, because you can keep an eye out before you open it and come down, I would imagine. That if someone was going to be spotted coming out rather than going in.
Right. Is there ventilation in here?
The hatches are not airtight.
I was thinking like a ventilation duct.
Yes.
Is there any way that somebody could crawl through that? We lost you, Sean.
Sorry. It's ceiling level.
Oh, yeah. Well, guys, you got me. I just think that everybody should keep a real eye out for anything that might... I like your idea of hiding down here, except that how would we even get away with that, with the hatch up above and...
What's near the hatch? Is there some place we could hide where we could see the hatch to see who's coming and gone from that?
A place on the deck where we can see the hatch.
The hatches.
Mm-hmm. What was that, Sean?
If you were on the main deck, you know from walking around, the hatches are fully visible. I mean, there's boxes and things around them. It's entirely possible for someone to, just without a roll of any sort, hide by a hatch, open and get inside if no one's looking. It is entirely possible. Because once you look at it again, you can see that the hatches can be opened from the inside.
So someone could just stand on the deck being sort of nonchalantly, nondescriptly smoking 60 or 70 cigarettes for a while in the hope that someone came before they contracted emphysema.
Well, the question is there a place on the deck where we can stand and keep an eye out without them really thinking that that's what we're doing, maybe from a distance?
Mm-hmm.
All we have to do is see, even if it's way off in the distance, if we can see somebody go into the hatch, then we go there and stop them for whatever.
Perhaps
it is.
What if someone was sort of standing around a corner and just holding a mirror and watching the hatch. Mind you, we don't know that they're going to go back down into the hold. It could be days.
Well,
I mean, well, the bomb components are there, but are the bomb component, is that the actual bomb that they were planning to use? I mean, that might just be like, they might already have a bomb.
The leftovers?
That might not be the only bomb they've made. There might be several.
Well, I think Sparky came up with the idea that it's most likely they'd blow it up when it was in port, which I think that's probably right.
Unless they're stupid.
Yeah, unless they want to die with it.
Or crazy.
Yeah.
What time of day is it now?
It's the end of the day. It is now dinner time, for example. It is approximately dinner time.
I just had another thought. We have access to the walkie-talkies for the expedition, right?
Oh, that's a misunderstanding. There are no walkie-talkies.
Oh.
There are field radios. That's all you have. They're smaller portable versions of the larger radios that would be used at the base camp.
So somebody is like actually has to man one of those.
Mm-hmm. Probably has to have it on their back.
You carry it on your back. You set it down. You open it up. You extend the aerial. Yep.
Well, I'm hungry.
Yes.
Hopefully we won't all be given strychnine poisoning or anything. It's getting to the point where I'm not sure that we should continue. But are we going to tell more? I think we should tell more.
I agree. Are we going to leave the bomb items here? So as not to let them know that we're onto them?
We could leave a big note here saying, we know who you are and we know what you're doing.
Gotcha.
And then when they freak out, then we'll know who they are and we'll know what they're doing.
Well, sure, with the bomb, how would they have set it off? I was going to ask Captain Arthur that. With your experience, with the bomb, would it be like a remote control? Would they have to come back to set it off? Like, I know this guy could be
slow fuse.
Yeah.
Probably a slow fuse.
If sure, this guy's crazy, he just might want to kill himself as well. I'll, sink the ship and that's it. He doesn't care.
Well, if that were the case, he would have done it already.
Well, Captain Sargon, do you want to do an intelligence roll?
Okie dokie.
He could just set a fire in the hold and turn the ship out.
He has been giving us plenty of chances to turn around. Or, I mean, he's starting small.
Oh, 55.
Is that a pass?
Yes.
Based on the parts that you found, you would need to have a fuse. Someone would have to light a fuse, and that would be what sets off the detonation.
It would have to be a long, slow fuse.
Mm. Do we have any fuse wire on the ship? For example?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can we go and find the fuse wire?
You'd have to find a manifest that tells you which hold it's in.
Okay.
Wouldn't necessarily have to have a long fuse. He could do something as simple as setting up a candle so that when the candle burns down far enough, it hits the fuse and lights it.
Yep, or a cigarette.
Yeah, or a cigarette.
Well, if you guys bring me a sandwich, I'll take first watch on the hatch here.
Are you going to do it from up above?
Yeah, that's...
I'll bring you a sandwich.
I'll take first watch.
Just find a place to hide where you can see and nobody will notice you sitting there.
And then somebody else tell Mr. Moore.
I'll go talk to Mr. Moore.
All right. What's everyone else doing?
What about setting up a couple more watches for the night?
I'm working.
What was that, Simon?
You guys can work out whatever schedule you want.
I'm working. I'm working on an amplifier system.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't have anything else to do, so I'll take the next watch.
Okay, for sure. I'll take the one after that, too.
All right, we'll just keep rotating.
All right. So is everyone else going for food, or what's the plan?
Yeah, I think so. I'll bring Tommy. It's not Tommy.
Elmer.
Elmer. I'll bring Elmer back. A sandwich.
Well, food, it's the usual you've been having for the last little while, the not so great food. And you are due to give Mr. Moore an update. So
okay.
He sees you and waves you over and says, how are things going? What have you found so far?
Well, I need to speak with you in private.
Oh.
So that we can, I guess, are we private enough here where I can talk to him quietly?
He sees the look in your eye and he says, come back to my cabin. That's probably the best.
All right.
Whoever's with you, myself or...
is anybody going to come with me?
Sure, I will.
Actually, I'm going to stick behind in the mess hall. Actually, I've had an idea.
Okay. So the two doctors.
All right. Well, he walks with the two of you back to his cabin. Goes in, shuts the door. There's no one else in the room, of course. And he says, "What have you found so far? What's the update?"
We found more evidence of sabotage, and most alarmingly, we have found the rudimentary beginnings of a construction of an explosive device, a bomb. And we are trying to come up with a way to catch this person. The person seems to be working at moments down in the hold. So we're keeping an eye out on the hold to see if we can catch somebody going down there.
Was it ready for use? Was it ready to be set off?
Not quite. No, it's still under construction. It's not a, it's a crude device. It could be made by anybody. But I go through the details of all the other little bits and pieces that we found.
And the other, this is interesting. He says, we're going to have to radio ahead for all of these things that have been damaged to be, replaced. So I'll put someone on that. Well, actually, Mr. Starkweather will probably want to do that himself.
We thought it would be prudent to speak with you and not Mr. Starkweather, because he tends to, how shall we say it, go a little bit overboard when it comes to his emotions. And we would rather nobody know that we are keeping an eye on the hold until we've caught this person.
Well, we can't keep it a secret from the captain. The captain deserves to know, especially if we're all at risk. But think, is there a way to eliminate suspects that you've come up with or identify the saboteur? If there is, I'd be inclined to do so before going to the others.
We have two sets of possibilities. It's either a member of the crew or it's a member of the expedition team. which covers everybody. We've spoken to the bosun about if he's had any reports about people not being at their job, and he says that he has not. Everybody's at their job. I find it personally hard to believe that it would be any member of the seasoned crew, though it could be a member of, you know, somebody who was brought on for this expedition alone.
It could be somebody on the expedition itself. I don't know. We could try questioning everybody, but I don't think that that's going to lead anywhere. Nobody seems to have seen anyone in the vicinity of the hatch or anywhere where the sabotage was done. So I'm at a loss as how to eliminate. I've tried to come up with a trick to get people to actually, you know, to confess it. A trap to set so that the person gets something that incriminates them.
He thinks for a moment, nods, says, I'll give you a day, two at the most. I don't want to put the ship at risk, so you should make sure that no one goes back to set off that device or finish completing the construction of it.
That's our intention. We'll keep an eye on it to make sure that nobody goes down there.
Okay, so I'll give you 1-2 days, report back to me tomorrow to see how things are going. If you're absolutely at a dead end, we'll have to inform the captain and go from there.
You got it.
Okay, thank you. Sir. Good work. Good luck.
Thank you. All right. So we put our plan in motion.
So we're going to watch the hold in stages, like in shifts, rather.
Well, let's see. Who's all going to do the watching? I am. Dr. Hawks, Elmer.
I'll take a turn. It won't be the first time that I've been on watch.
So that's four of us plus, I imagine, Nigel's probably willing as well. So that's five of us, and we've got 24 hours in a day. So we're on like 4.5 hour, something like that. 4.5 hour shifts, if you will. All right. As long as nothing happens when Nigel's on his shift.
Before I leave the mess hall.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Could I quietly have a chat with Mr. Whitney, the chief steward?
Yes.
Do you have a moment?
Yes, of course. What would you like?
Well, I was just wondering. Actually, your cook. He's been with you a long time. Has he? You worked with him a long while.
Many years. Yes, good gentleman. Yes,
he's done very well, I thought. You know, I mean, we used to mess food myself, being in the army. But I have to say, he's done very well with this, especially with our straitened circumstances in which we now find ourselves since the refrigeration went down. I think he's performed very admirably.
He does the best with what he has available, and he always does well.
Oh, he's done very well. And I suppose the rest of your staff you haven't been with them quite as long.
It's a merchant marine ship. They come and go. Quite a few have been here with us for a while. Some have been and come back and gone away and come back again.
Let's see. Any new ones on for this?
Yes, we have some new ones.
Here in the mess or under your command?
Not necessarily in the mess. There's some gentlemen that I haven't really worked with before, but they've all come with polished resumes or polished references, rather.
Oh, that's good. You can't beat previous experience, can you? It's good to have experienced men.
It is.
Yeah, dear.
Why are you asking about it? It's just
curious. I mean, you know, we've been at sea a long while now. I'm just desperate for conversation, to be honest with you.
I don't blame you. It's a long, long, cold voyage to come and warm to this point. So yes, it's It can get a little boring after over time.
Oh, well. Well, we've, at least we've got that box of books, haven't we? So,
Absolutely.
Something to do. I'm sure I've heard someone playing the squeeze box somewhere as well.
We have one or two of those on board.
Well, thank you very much for your help.
Thank you.
I'll let you get on with your job. Please pass my compliments on to the cook.
I will do that, Captain Sugden. Thank you.
Well, that wasn't particularly useful, was it?
Jay, you want to do it? If you want to do a psychology role, if you have that?
I think I do. Yes, not very great, but I do have it. I'll try. Oh, 33, and my psychology is 30. I could spend some luck points.
Well, I would say you don't have to for that. He comes across as being honest and not necessarily that he doesn't want to speak to you. He's being polite. But like most of the crew, being an expedition member, he's a little bit still hesitant. But he seems to have been honest with what he was saying.
Okay. Are any of the other mess staff in there?
Oh, there's a few people here and there, yes.
Let me look at the manifest again. So the stewards, we know the cook is Whitney's known him for a while. I'm taking it, the laundry staff won't be serving. So we've got
not food.
Adam Henning and Philip Coates, the two mess boys. Are they on duty?
Yes, both are on duty right now. It's a main meal. Yeah. They are on duty running around.
Well, I'm going to sit back down and have a cup of coffee and wait until there's a lull when I can have a chat with one of them.
Well, it does slow down fairly. The time you arrived was midway through the meal, and Mr. Henning is standing right there just gathering up some things, and he's got a piece of paper. He's reading down some notes and puts it back in his pocket like he's got some things he has to remember to do. He's just cleaning up, nods his head at you. Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Fine, sir. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad at all. It's difficult to find things to do on a voyage this long. I mean, you know, once my work's done for the day, I'm at a bit of a loose end. I don't know. It does go on a bit at sea, doesn't it?
Does. You know, Mr. Starkweather brought a box of books on board at the right over there.
Yes. I know. I keep meaning to have a look through those. Have you? I suppose you must have been on quite a few voyages by now.
A few here and there. I've worked ashore and I've worked on ship.
It's your first time with this crew?
No. Well, this crew, yes. Yes, I've worked with some of them in the past on previous other ships.
I see. You've been down this way before, to the Antarctic before?
I've been to Australia once, yes.
Uh-huh.
And New Zealand once, and South America, and back more frequently.
I see. Have you served with Captain Vredenberg before?
No, not Captain Vredenberg, no.
I see. Are you enjoying your your time here on this particular ship?
So far, it's not too bad. It's very busy. I'm very tired at the end of the day, and I intend to go to sleep and wake in the morning without waking in between.
I see.
I tend to sleep best when it's a little bit wavy, so there's been some nights that are better than others.
It can be pleasant, can't it? The swaying of the ship and everything. Yes, I find it quite soothing myself.
Mm-hmm. It is. Some say it's similar, like your mother rocking you.
Yes, yeah. So that's a good analogy. Yes, indeed. Well, look, I'll let you get back on with your work there.
Thank you very much. Sure
you've much to do.
Oh, always. Have a good evening, sir.
He wanders off,
gathering things in the kitchen, and heads off to who knows where.
I have a question. How long have we been on board our ship now? We've been here for a few weeks. All right.
Yes.
It seems reasonable that we've gotten to know the other scientists on the ship.
Yes.
So as a scientist, does it seem like any of the other scientists don't know what they're talking about, i.e. they're faking it?
Well, you've been to a number of educational sessions.
That's true.
Everyone teaching seems to know what they're talking about. The ones you've interacted with, you could go one by one if you like, or just do a general... Okay.
Well, for instance, we've got the geologist, Willard Griffith, which I did actually really well in the geology class. So I guess my question for him was, how long has Charlie Porter been his assistant?
2 years.
Okay. Of course, I'm a paleontologist, and the other paleontologist on board is Morehouse Bryce. Mm-hmm. So I would know immediately if he wasn't what he claimed to be.
Yes. Does not come across as someone who's not knowledgeable.
How about his assistant? How long has he had his assistant?
1 year.
Okay. Archaeologist Charles Myers. I don't know him very well, but, you know, I'd strike up a conversation with him. He's an archaeologist. It's interesting. And I'd ask him the same thing about his assistant, Avery Giles.
Well, no matter who you ask, there's varying degrees of opinions of their assistants. Okay. Some say, well, they're just kids. Some are like, I couldn't operate without them. But in general, they all seem to know what they're doing, and all the scientists come across as knowledgeable. No one seems to be...
So they're not like, no, this kid was just a kid at the college and he just begged me to go on board the ship and go on this. Okay. All right. So
lots of rocks.
What's that?
It's not like the geologist is, I know lots about rocks. They actually do seem to come across as being fully
known. Okay. So I'm hoping that eliminates the scientists, at least from my general thing. I don't hear them talking about witchcraft or voodoo or anything like that. So, okay, well, that was my line of inquiry.
Elmer, are you doing anything? Or Dr. Hawks?
Do you know what? I'm sure beforehand we talked what sort of timeline we're going to switch our shifts. Mm-hmm. Dr. Lindenberg, do you remember what time you were going to leave Elmer Jones there?
Yeah, I was taking it right after Elmer.
Okay.
So whenever that comes.
I think we talked about like 4 hour increments or something.
Yeah, 4.5 hour maybe. Can't remember. But yeah, that's about right. One other question for the GM. Sure. Niles and Gunnar Sorensen, are they brothers from Norway?
Yes.
Okay. Twins?
No, one's older than the other.
Oh, okay. I just noticed they had the same last name.
Oh! I forgot to ask the mess bloke. What was his name?
Henning.
I forgot to ask him a question. Can I catch him the next time he comes past?
Yeah, absolutely. He is back and forth. I mean, right now he's tidying up and preparing. So he certainly passes by in like 5 minutes or so.
Okay. Sorry, I forgot to ask when we chatted before. Was it you who discovered the damage to the refrigerators?
No, it was not me. And it was, I can't remember who it was. And he has to think for a moment. He thinks it was one of the porters, I think, please.
Well, one of the porters, I see. But I suppose you must be backing down, back and forth down to the refrigerators all the time, though, or to staff?
At times, yes.
Yes. You didn't see anyone down there behaving strangely?
I didn't see anybody around there who didn't belong.
Have you seen anyone generally acting oddly? Or?
Well, don't take this offensively, but none of the crew seem odd. Expedition, you expedition people, we don't know you. So we do tend to be a little bit cautious around you, but no, I didn't. We haven't noticed anything out of the ordinary, other than the situation, the things that happened.
Can I make a psychology roll again?
Sure. Don't throw the dice.
24. 24 out of 30. Which 30 is 30. So just a regular success. Does he look like he's telling the truth? Does he look like he might be covering for someone?
He doesn't seem to be telling any mistruths, no. He seems to be telling the truth.
Doesn't look like he's trying to hide anything, or...
I don't think that close of a success you'd be able to necessarily verify that. But he doesn't seem to be outright lying to you.
I'm beginning to think that my idea might not be that good. working up. Okay. I'll go back to my coffee and keep an eye out for the other mess bloke.
All right.
Go back.
What were you doing, Dr. Hawks? Sorry. Greg.
That's you, Greg. You're muted.
Sorry, it was freezing. He said, started to say something that then...
Oh, I was calling, seeing what you are doing now.
Okay, do you know what? I'm going to take a walk around the ship just to kind of buy a bit of time. Maybe even go back to my room and then I'll just kind of time it. So I'm going to go back and meet Elmer after 8 hours because I know Dr. Landenberg's going to be there for about 4.5 hours. So you know, I sort of want to time it so around 2 a.m. or something, I guess.
All right. And Sparky, you're still working on your electrical project?
I said, yeah.
All right. Well, I will skip ahead a bit, but first, Captain Sugden, the other fellow, comes by the mess where you are after about 20 minutes or so. And he looks very tired.
Sorry, is this Philip Coates, this one?
Yes, it is.
It is, all right, okay. Long night.
Oh, yes, it's much more difficult with all these issues regarding the food.
Oh, yes, I know. I think your cook's done very well considering, but it's terrible, isn't it? That we've lost the refrigerators.
That's a pain in the ass, sir, if you don't mind my language.
Well, it must make things enormously difficult for you.
Very.
Did you know who discovered it?
I thought it was one of the able seamen. It was just somebody walking by who noticed a smell.
Let's see. You didn't see anyone acting strangely around there?
Not on this voyage. Everyone's acting strange because everyone's worried.
That does seem to be the feeling, doesn't it? There's a lot of mistrust on this voyage. How do you get on with the other crew, the fellows in your what would you call it? It's not a division, is it? I mean, what would you call the mess staff? Fellows in the mess staff, I don't know.
We all get along fine. With a lot of work, a lot of hard work. The cook moves us around pretty fast, but no issues. Everyone's fine.
You served with this crew for a while?
Pardon me?
Have you served with this crew for a while?
Yes. I've been on this ship for years now.
What? Cut out there.
Oh, 3 years now.
3 years?
Well, yes.
So must be well used to them. What about the other mess staff? What about the other fella over there, Henning, is it?
Oh, Henning,
yeah. Yeah. He been here long?
No, he's been on the ship before, but not recently, no.
Oh, so
maybe he hasn't. Maybe I worked with him somewhere else. It comes and goes. We're on so many trips back and forth. Last little while, we've done some short runs, so it hasn't really been the same people all the time.
I guess so. Yeah, but he seems like he knows his job, does he?
Haven't seen him mess up yet.
Okay. I noticed he was reading from he had a list of notes. He seemed to be doing his work via some notes. Is that normal?
Got my pad right here. Also, there's just a little flip pad of paper.
I see.
We'll schedule things to do, when to do them.
Well, look, I bet...
Is there something wrong with Mr.
Henning? Not that I know, no. Just chatting to him. That's all. Just making small talk, really. Past the time. Look, I'll let you get on with your work. You're clearly very busy. I don't want to keep.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Take care. Yep. Well, that's the mess stuff question, and I am none the wiser. But I do now know their names. And I know that Henning has not been on the ship long. He might have been on the ship before. But Coates has been on for 3 years, so I don't think it's him, so he's off the list.
If you just keep them all engaged in conversation, we will have a mate.
Yes. We have an enormous game of Trivial Pursuit.
There's actually something else.
One of the crew.
There's something else we might consider. We don't necessarily have to. If this person is trying to sabotage our expedition, We don't necessarily have to know who it is. We just have to stop the person from sabotaging our expedition. If a general announcement was made to the entire crew that there was a saboteur on board, everybody would be keeping an eye out for him. And maybe they wouldn't catch him, but he wouldn't be able to do any more damage, because everybody would be looking for him. If he tried to go somewhere he wasn't supposed to, somebody would see that for sure. And they'd say, hey, you're not supposed to be there. Are you the saboteur? I mean, it could start a witch hunt, but at the same time, it's just got to stop the saboteur from sabotaging. Just a thought. Might be a bad idea, but it's a thought. Anyways, Sean, you were going to move on.
It sounds like Mara was going to do that after 2 days, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. After a day and a half. He wants you to report back tomorrow at the same time, dinner time. And if he doesn't see progress.
Okay.
The evening passes. Dr. Lindenbrook, do you want to make an idea? Can you make an idea roll?
Sure. 13. That is a hard. I mean, no, it's an extreme.
Okay, and could you do one more?
That's an 82. That didn't pass.
Okay. Well, let's just say throughout the evening, the nucleus of an idea, something is at the back of your head. You're thinking about it. You're putting it together, but you've got a lot of time to think about it. So,
well, 4.5
something,
hours.
Something's there. And it's something. Yes, 4.5 hours of sitting there. Something about the poisoning of the dogs and the refrigerator. It's just you're kind of something together about those two things is making you think really. So there's a connection somehow that you haven't quite put together.
All right.
Refrigerator. All right. Okay. So as there's shift, I assume, and morning rolls around, it's breakfast, and the day progresses. Are you going to continue shifts throughout the day?
Is it the second or the third? Second, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep, now it's the second.
That's right.
So it's now the second, and you are same thing as before?
Yeah.
Okay. Day progresses, unless someone is doing anything in particular.
Don't I have to make a report to Moore?
Yep. Well, Mr. Moore is waiting for you around.
Well, Mr. Moore, I'm not sure that we've made any progress, but it might be necessary to at least inform everyone so that if anybody tries something, they'll get seen to at least stop the sabotage. But maybe if you can give me one more day, I almost solved it, I think. It's right there.
No one's been going in the hold?
We haven't seen anybody, no.
Okay. I'll give you one more day, and if nothing comes about, we'll have to contact the captain and let him know. But please, absolutely, please inform me if anyone goes in that hole.
All right. Now, the quick question for the GM or the I forget what it's called. Is it called pemmican?
Pemmican, yes.
The pemmican, that's not stored in the freezer, is it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is. So it's not like beef jerky.
Pemmican. No, it's a mixture of things that are stored in the freezer and taken out and cut into slices to feed the dogs directly, or you throw it in hot water to make a nutritious soup. There's all kinds of things to do with pemmican.
Okay, so it's possible that this person went into the freezer to poison the pemmican and sabotage the freezer, or accidentally somehow broke the freezer.
Could you do a pair of idea rolls again?
Sure.
It's the next day. You can do it again.
11, which is another hot
one. And 94.
And, come on, 14.
Perfect. Here's what you've come up with on your own, not having spoken to the others. As the connection between the poisoning of the dogs and the
Oh, great. You're going to cut out now, right when you're talking.
That was your only chance.
Yep, that was it. You cut out, and I'll never know now what
of course I did. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. The poisoning of dogs, damage to the refrigerator. Both of those things require access to a specific area of the kitchen.
Right.
And the only people in your mind, you go through the names of the people on the ship, the chief steward, Whitney, the cook, the two mess boys, Coates and Henning, the storekeeper, Price, and First Officer Turlough. Those are the only persons, based on your knowledge, who should have access to that area.
All right.
No expeditionary members would have any reason to go to that area.
Right.
And general staff are not generally allowed in that area.
Okay. So we've got Whitney, the cook. Oops, where's my list? Are you joking? I think we made fun of the fact that our chief steward's first name is Judas. Judas Whitney. Judas Whitney. Niles. Abraham. I'm sorry, Abram. I'm sorry, Adam. God, I can't read. Philip. Got Bryce. Wait, did you say Bryce? Price. Sorry. Price. Thomas Price. And Turlough.
Well, look, if we can rustle up the rations and possibly a big jerry can, big empty jerry can, and some water, I'm up for going and hiding in the hold. You know, just come down every now and then and bring me some fresh food and water.
Mr. Coates, or Captain Sugden? It's Mr. Coates coming up to you.
Ah, Mr. Coates, how are you?
Fine, can we speak for a second in private?
Yes, of course. What can I do for you?
He takes you aside. He says, I lied to you yesterday. I told my boss, they know that I was the one who found the damage to the refrigerator. I was nervous because I was supposed to be on deck taking part in the shellback ceremony, and I had a little too much to drink, and I had slipped off to have a nap. I got up, rushed around to do my duties that I hadn't finished before the ceremony, and I found the damage to the refrigerator. I didn't want anyone to think I was responsible.
So you found the damage?
Yes.
And what sort of time was that?
It was 5 o'clock during the ceremony, during the shellback ceremony.
That's 5 p.m., isn't it?
Yeah, 5 p.m., 1700.
I see. And who else would have had access to that?
To that area?
Hmm.
Oh, myself and Chief Steward Whitney, the cook, Mr. Henning and myself, Storekeeper Price and Mr. Turlow, First Officer Turlow, were the only ones who have access to that area.
Mm-hmm. Do you know of those people? Had you seen them all previously at the shellback ceremony, or as you said, you slipped off for a nap, didn't you?
I slipped off. I didn't want to be. I know there was going to be drinking after the ceremony, but I wasn't. I was on duty, and I had been drinking beforehand, so I didn't want people to know I had been. So I slipped off to have to sleep it off a bit.
Well, that's, you know, I can understand. It's a high-spirited moment, isn't it?
It is.
Something like that. I mean, it's perfectly understandable. It's rather better to sleep it off than carry on your duties drunk, certainly.
I didn't want anyone to think it was because of me, because I've been drinking, that the refrigerator was damaged. So I found it like that, and I just sort of left a note for someone to take a look at the refrigerator, and then I bolted.
Quite so. So you've no idea who could have been down there then?
Just those of us who have access were the only ones who should be there. It doesn't mean that someone else couldn't get access, but it would be difficult. They'd have to get keys. They would have to get into the refrigerator itself is locked. I mean, we certainly keep lock on that to keep people from stealing food, taking it back to their bunks. But it was generally just us.
Well, I appreciate you telling me this.
Thank you, sir. I couldn't live with myself. I didn't want anyone to think I was responsible.
No, of course not. I fully understand. No. Don't worry. I appreciate you telling me.
Thank you. And he sort of scurries off. He nods a bit and takes off.
Just before he goes, can I make a psychology roll again? And
sure. Absolutely.
He's on the level, is he? I mean, he's telling the truth. Let's make my roll. Oh, 15.
He appears to be 100% honest in what he's saying to you, and very nervous, and it seems to all tie in together. The way he's acting, the way he's talking. So, yes, he seems like he's honest.
Well, thank you for telling me. Thank you for putting your trust in me, Mr. Coates.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Much, much appreciated.
So, I think I'm going to talk to the boatswain. The boatswain. I'm still going to pronounce that correctly.
The T is silent.
And so is the W-A-I-N.
Yes.
I'm going to talk to the boatswain and ask him about these five people, if any of them are new to the ship. Thomas Price, Judas Whitney, Niles Abraham, Adam Henning, and Philip Coates, and Paul Turlow.
Well, various people have come and gone. Mr. Henning's only been on this cruise. He's been on, other people know him from other travels. Mm-hmm. Mr. Coates has been here 2 years, I think or 5 years rather. Generally, it's a mishmash. Some people are new, some people are not new. Most of the officers are not new.
Well, no, but I'm asking specifically about like Judas Whitney.
Mr. Whitney is not new. He's been on the ship for a few years.
And how about the cook, Niles?
Nope, he's been here for more than 5 years.
And your storekeeper?
Not new as well.
And your first officer, Paul Turlow.
Mr. Turlow is also, he's been on a few voyages on this ship at least.
Okay.
Shit.
All right, I'm going to go talk to Moore.
Okay. What are you doing, Mr. Hawk? Greg.
Yep. Do you know what? I'm just going to follow around with Dr. Lundenberg here. I'm not trying to help out.
Okay. Elmer?
Is there a chapel on the ship?
They usually use part of the mess, and Mr. Starkweather does a bit of a... There's no chaplain on the ship. Mr. Starkweather does a bit of a motivational, non-denominational thing on Sundays. He's not a religious man, but he believes it's important.
Okay. I'll just so you guys, my line of thinking, I was reading through the notes again, and I saw the note from the crazy person that was slipped to Mr. Sugden, and it was mentioning the Blessed Mary. So it leads me to believe like he might be Catholic.
Okay.
I don't really have any other ideas beyond that.
All right, so I'm going to talk to Moore.
Yep, Mr. Moore is there.
I'm going to tell him that I think that we have narrowed it down. And the fact is that the food was poisoned in the freezer, and the damage to the freezer was done in the freezer, obviously. And the only six people that have access are the first officer, the shopkeeper, the cook, and the stewards, and the chief steward.
Hmm.
I don't think anybody else could have possibly gotten in there. They would have needed a key.
So not expedition members. That's good for us. Crew members. Captain Brandenburg isn't really tied to any of these people. He hasn't, but he is the captain, so he will. I'll have to go speak to him about this. He will want to perform his duties as a captain and organize a search. Do you think this is acceptable to you?
We've got to find out who's doing this. We've got to stop it at least. I can't see any other way around it.
All right. Thank you very much. I will go speak to the captain and Mr. Starkweather. Thank you.
All right. And I inform the others in our group what's going on.
I'm going to head back to the mess. Before I do, I'll just fill you in on what happened with Coates. I mean, this guy came and talked to me, and he seemed on the level. He admitted to me that he was the one who found the damage to the refrigerator.
Did you ask him if he saw anybody going in there earlier?
He didn't see anyone going in there, but I asked him who had access to the area, and he gave me exactly the same names that you've just mentioned to us.
I think we've narrowed it down. Now, and
I can't say for sure, but from my own perspective, I didn't think he was lying to me.
Why would he have confessed at that point?
Why would he have admitted that he was there?
Right.
That would just put him in the frame. I mean, that would be a ridiculous thing to do if it was him.
Unless he's guilty and he's Catholic.
Similarly, I mean, the cook, I can't see the cook doing it, because the cook is going to just create a huge amount of work for the cook.
The biggest problem is they've all been on the ship for a while.
Yeah.
Except for Hennings. But he's got a good reputation. He's been on one ship or another.
Hmm.
I was sure the saboteur would be somebody brand new.
I think I'm gonna go back to the mess hall.
Well, be careful, because now that we're narrowing it down, the danger increases.
Well, it's just if I go back there, there's Henning, Whitney, and Abram to question. So I've got my pistol. Don't worry about me.
Well, I tell him what Moore is going to try. So I think that at this point we don't have much choice.
Right. It is dinner time, by the way, and you all notice.
We're on the 28th now, aren't we?
No, it's the
third, second.
Second. The ship. Good. Yes, we skipped ahead a little bit. The engines stop, and the ship stops moving after a few moments. Yeah. And you hear all hands on deck. And ship's horn blasts three times. And all crew make their way to the surface of the ship. And the expedition members, of course, are told that's what you have to do. So,
right.
And a search begins. And people are not in their rooms while the search begins. And the ship's crew is not happy about this. They, of course, are now eyeing everybody in the expedition. Like, what have you people done to us? And after a good 15, 20 minutes, actually more like an hour, you see Mr. Starkweather, not Starkweather, more the captain and the first mate come up above decks, and they grab Mr. Henning. And he actually tries to run away, but the rest of the crew stop him. They grab Mr. Henning and they escort him below into the offices of the ship, like the superstructure. Mr. Moore comes to you and says, good work, everyone. Calls you guys aside, you the bunch of you.
What is it that
says we found? Well, apparently, I wasn't allowed to be involved, but I was told about this. They found some clippings, newspaper clippings from New York on our expedition, some pieces of paper about the expedition, but the map and such, two stoppered bottles, including one that was actually clearly marked sulfuric acid, extremely potent, you know, a proper large enough bottle of sulfuric acid, and another that they haven't been able to identify what was in that, and a telegram where Mr. Henning was offered $250 for an exclusive eyewitness account of the Gabriel sent to a Chicago wire service, which one of the crew, actually, the officers, is familiar, and he doesn't know the name of this wire service, even though he has family in the newspaper business. So all in all, things are pointing to Mr. Henning being the culprit, and they are taking him to a hold, where he will be kept for the duration of the journey.
What does he have to say about these things? Is he denying them, or?
He's just been taken into the superstructure, and you can hear a lot of yelling and noises coming from there. A few moments later, you see him brought out, his hands behind his back, and he's fighting, and he looks furious and angry.
Did you say the first officer was one of those ones that came up?
Mr. Turlough.
Yeah, okay.
So there's a lot of muttering and going on amongst the crew.
You're thinking also a possible setup.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if Turlough was one of the people in charge of finding the doing the searches. Was he?
Mr. Thurlow was not part of the search party, Mr. Moore tells you.
Okay, he was not. Oh, okay. Or Judas Whitney?
No, they were not.
Okay.
Anyone who was on the list that you provided were not part of the searches. But being senior officers, they weren't made to stand on the deck like the rest of us.
Okay. So we could also assume that if somebody were to be set, were to set up Adam Henning, then they would have had to have known the list that we provided. So that's very unlikely, huh?
If you want to do an idea roll, I guess not. Well, you've been on the ship long. You've been on the ship long enough. You've seen the ship's crew roster. I think you probably can put two and two together that anyone working on the ship would know who has access to that area.
Okay. All right.
If you wanted something from the kitchen, the refrigerator, you could ask any crewman, and they'd probably tell you one of those six people or the people to talk to get to
that area. I still don't understand why, though. Why was he sabotaging the mission? What was?
They're probably going to get down to the find out. They don't know yet. But the question is, there's two things that have been accomplished. One is the sabotage should stop. Because if the sabotage doesn't stop, then we'll know that we have the wrong person, and the saboteur will be giving himself away. So this should stop the sabotage. Mm-hmm. And second, we might be able to find out who the saboteur is now, because... Well, let's see. We shouldn't
become complacent. We should remain vigilant.
Correct.
Because he might very well not be the saboteur.
Correct. How old is Adam Henning? Just a kid?
He's early 30s.
Oh, okay, so he's not a kid.
Kid
in mess me. Boy. He'd be called mess man.
That's right. Well, news of the capture spreads throughout the crew. People are elated. People feel safe. The mistrust between the crew and the expedition people seems to have vaporized. And you know that he's been put into a forward hold, and he has two guards at all times outside this locked forward hold area. They've radioed ahead. They've taken your information on the missing or damaged, anything you found in the holds. And the assumption is that when you arrive at Melbourne, the materials should be ready for you, and the food and such, to be able to stay for only a day or two and then leave.
Question, can we, in the interim, ask whoever is in charge of security, mm-hmm. if they find out why he did it?
Mr. Thurlow is the person who's in charge of the guards and the people who are watching. They have asked him some questions, and he's refusing to answer.
Okay, so he's not pleading that he's innocent.
Oh, he's definitely not saying he's guilty, but he's certainly not saying he did anything, and he's angry. He's angry about the whole situation.
Okay. Well, okay.
All right. Well, the police are waiting for him. There's a little bit of a sticky legal situation in that he is not a resident of Australia. So they have to make a lot of calls to embassies and such. But the police will be prepared to be on the dock when you arrive. So... moving forward, what about education? You are arriving in Melbourne on the 11th. There is nothing that you know of happening between now and then. So there's a little bit of stormy seas later on, but up until the 10th, so you could have whatever education you wish to do between now and then.
Do we have new classes offered?
There are. I thought I gave you a list. As it wears on, the classes are starting to be less and less technical. Like there's ballroom dancing, there's chess playing, there's a jewelry making one that the lady that you've forgotten about has put on?
Oh, Charlene?
Yes.
I haven't forgotten about her. She just seemed busy.
She's very busy. There's origami classes. There is also geology classes, operate heavy machinery. The radio operation classes are still ongoing that Sparky was helping out with.
Yeah, okay. Dynamite. I'll continue with that class. Mm-hmm. No.
I'm just going to stick with my three classes that I was doing before.
All right. So, nobody wants to go on anything?
For dog sledding. Oh, we don't have dogs.
No, you do. Still have some dogs. They weren't all put to death.
Heavy machinery. Operator. Navigation. Navigation.
If any of you wish to put on classes, you can do that as well.
How many... Sorry, carry on, Tom.
I'm putting on the class on the drill. Mm-hmm. That's things we've been doing.
Can I put on a basic first aid class?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Yeah. Do you know what? No, I'm gonna offer that up to the for the rest of the week. So.
That's easy.
How many points do we roll for a successful thing? I mean, how many points do we get? Which dice do we roll?
Ten-sided dice.
Just 10. Okay.
Just so you guys know, I've now, I think, officially become knowledgeable enough to be dangerous with dynamite.
Excellent.
Cool. I think that lack of knowledge makes you even more dangerous with dynamite. You know, I'm really tired of this. My good rolls. I keep getting really good rolls. I get 4, I get 8, which means I don't improve. Oh, shit. Okay. Whatever.
Well, I got 2. 2 of the 3.
I improved my radio, and that's about it.
What more do you need?
I've learned a great deal more about the history of earlier expeditions.
That's always useful.
And in my meteorology, I've learned another name of a cloud type.
Fluffy.
Stratus.
Chemtrail.
I did previously in geology.
Sean, what's my first aid skill?
I learned the elements of the elements.
The elements of the elements.
Yeah. There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, rhenium, nickel, neodymium, ruthenium, germanium. I could go on.
Like Animaniacs.
Yeah.
Geranium?
Germanium.
Germanium.
Germanium. Europium, zirconium, rutetium, palladium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, radium, and gold, and protactinium, and indium, and gallium. I could go on. All right.
What was that, Dr. Hawks? You want to be doing first aid there, or what's the?
Okay, so I'm teaching first aid. My skill in that is 70, so I don't know if that affects people who are taking the class, because it's not going to affect me. It's not going to help my skill go up because I'm teaching other people just what I know. So. I don't know if any of the.
You're not learning anything new when you're teaching.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Is there any way I can get 10 minutes alone with Henning?
You can ask, you can try to persuade someone.
can I try to talk?
By giving the security guard something that isn't dried food. Look, I've got a sandwich.
I have a chair. Here's a chair. Yeah, no, my persuade didn't work.
Now, they're under strict orders. Lemons. You want scurvy? You don't want scurvy. I have lemons. All right.
All right.
Okay. So you're traveling. You see land. Land ho. It's the coast of Australia. It's a treat indeed, it says. Because just as North America is turning from summer to autumn, Australia is turning from their version of winter into a warming spring. And the coast of New South Wales is wonderful to see. Mixed stands of conifers and broadleaf trees of gentle hills along the heights of the Great Divide Ridge, or range rather. Forests and grassland. It looks very nice from a distance, and some people have binoculars. You can look at it and see it. However, as you round the coast of Cape Howe between Tasmania and Australia on your way to Melbourne, the sea turns choppy, and a cold, hard wind drives everyone down below decks. The ship struggles through the Bass Straits and around the William Wilson Promontory. I didn't know that was called that. And it's a relief when the ship reaches Port Phillip Head and the calmer waters below. However, there's always a however. Melbourne's located in the northern end of Port Phillip Bay, 30 miles from its mouth. The entrance is less than a mile wide, and there's a place called the Rip where the land goes in and then out again, where all the water's concentrated. And it's very treacherous. So the ship rocks, and there's winds and waves and current and rip tides and such. But eventually, you make it through. A sea pilot comes to the shore, just like when going through the canal. And you make your way in eventually through the dangerous waters navigating and through the dangerous rocks and reefs and such. And you make it to harbor. And you are in Melbourne, Australia.
And what day do we arrive?
The 11th of October. We skipped ahead a lot, sorry.
Right, that's cool.
Yep. So the Philippi, it's a calm bay. It's very deep and very wide. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say I'm doing the cliche, they jump out and they start kissing the ground.
Well, it's a dirty old dock, so the.
He's great.
Yeah. So none of you seem to be falling down. You've still got your ship's legs, but it's a fairly big ship you were on, so you weren't rocking too much the last little way. You have a list of things that you have been entrusted with to recover. These are the items that you are in charge of making sure, because of your successes in the past with manifest manipulation. 5 tons of pemmican. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I knew we shouldn't have done such a great job.
That's right. You should have sucked at it. That's my solution. Do it badly. Don't fill the dishwasher well. You'll only have to do it the next time. 5 tons of pemmican, 12 tons of perishable frozen foods, 3 300-watt camp generators. You need 12 oxygen cylinders filled to replace the ones that have been damaged or emptied. He suggests you purchase, well, Mr. Starkweather wants 2 new camp radio sets, 100 watt sets, because even though you repair them, Sparky, he wants backups.
No problem. I'll get to
and two more trail radios as well.
Mm-hmm. I get wrong.
How many trail radios?
2, 40 watts.
2.
To supplement the 4 you already have that Sparky replaced, that gives 2 for backup.
Okay.
Now, also, did you make note of what you found that was damaged within the holds at all? I guess that would be all of it. Sorry, I'm jumping in the wrong place here.
Well, yes, we'll need coolant and
photography piping. Stuff, wasn't there? Photography and chemicals.
That's, yes, photography.
Dogs. Oxygen tanks.
Dogs.
Dogs. A refrigeration repair.
Kind of low on strychnine.
Now you have been provided. Now you don't have to write this down if you don't want to. But Mr. Starkweather has arranged for the replacement of some of the damaged goods. He radioed ahead, as you knew. You're handed a list. Professor Moore hands you a clipboard. The pemmican is a place called R.J. Manfield & Son Limited, 100 Fleming Close in Braybrook, which is nearby. The electrical equipment is from Peasley Power Equipment Manufacturers at 4420 Lennox Street, Richmond. Sorry?
I'll use a taxi to go over.
Oh, yes, of course. Photographic chemical supplies are from Foley and Burke. And when it comes to food and drink, Mr. Morse says, well, it says here there must be 100 places. Just ask locally. We need 24,000 pounds of varied meats, fruits, and perishables, unless you want to eat pemmican all winter. So there's some miscellaneous other bits and pieces, but those are the main things. So he's left it up to you. Now, you do notice the police arriving, and the police have come on board, and they leave with Mr. Henning. They're taking him in for questioning, and they say, you guys can't – you can hear them talking to Starkweather more. They say, Mr. Starkweather, we know about you. You can see crowds are arriving. People are very excited about your expedition. You're a celebrity, but you can't just leave this guy here and take off. Mr. Starkweather's not happy about this. He says, how long? How long do we have to wait? They said, a couple days at least, at the very least. And he says, well, we got things to gather, some supplies that were damaged, so I guess that's acceptable. So he's gone. So he's off. The police car takes off with Mr. Henning, and you've been handed a clipboard, and says, please do your best, guys. Take any assistance you need from the crew or expedition members, please feel free to ask.
Okay, well, I'm gonna take a few crew members with me and go in search of the 5 tons of pemmican.
All right.
Probably at the same time work on the 24,000 pounds of food.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll get the radio supplies.
Yep, the radio parts, yep.
I'll tell you right now, it's all going to be food that I like to eat.
Do you want a hand with that? I can pick up some good food too.
If you leave it up to me, I'll get you British Army food. It'll all be boiled beef and carrots.
Be sure to get some sour cream.
It's better than spam.
I'm sure Nigel will be questioning the airplane parts and everything.
Yes, he's been tasked with going over to make sure there's no damage to the airplane parts and make sure.
While on the way to get the pemmican, I mean, if I encounter any sort of news agents and bookshops, mm-hmm. can I keep an eye out for newspapers, magazines, books, and anything that's going to pass the time now after? Mm-hmm.
What's our schedule actually look like from this point on? It's October 11th. We're going to leave in a few days. How long before we get to Ross Island?
You're still a month away because not in real time, but game time, no. Because when you leave, you get into the areas of pack ice and such, so there's no anticipation that you can travel right straight through that.
I see. All right.
So,
I don't know. You said not in real time, but if you keep giving us these manifests to fill,
manifests madness. I know. Well, we can get through this.
Right.
So Sparky, is he gone?
How about has there been any news about Miss Lexington?
Yes, she had arrived at Tallahassee 3 days ahead. The Tallahassee and her arrived in Tasmania 3 days before you and have since departed.
And already left again. Yep.
Is it possible during this couple of days, can we check with the police and see if we found out anything more from this guy? Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely want to do that.
You'll have the opportunity. You know the police station, you just ask someone where it is. It's fairly close to the port. It's within walking distance.
Okay.
So who is... What's first? You're doing fresh and frozen food, right?
Yes.
All right. Fresh and frozen food. The one thing you find is that's a lot of food.
Yeah.
So even though Melbourne's a big place, 12 tons of food, you've got a manifest from the chief steward. And based on what you purchased already in New York City, and you find a lot of the stuff is not the same food that they have for sale here. So he didn't give you any address or anything, but you spend essentially a day wandering, making inquiries. And it's an astounding amount on the purchasing end to find. And it's not necessarily the best time of year for fresh fruit, it being the end of winter. But they certainly have lots of hogs, chickens, dairy products, and mutton cheaply available. So you can get lots of meat and protein, but not a lot of fruit. But the farmers and grocers are happy to do their best to help you. And they want to ask, they're asking questions like, what happened on the ship? What's going on? Who is that guy that was pulled off? They're asking all kinds of questions of you, though.
Well, I tell them that the guy who was pulled off, I don't know, it was some internal thing with the crew. The reason why we need all the food is because the freezer broke. There was an ammonia leak, and it tainted all the food, and it was just one of those things that happens, I guess.
Interesting. Wow, because the cops were there waiting for you, and then they took him away, and they wouldn't let anybody speak to him, wouldn't let the reporters speak to him or anything. It was quite a big deal.
Yeah, probably not as big a deal as you might think that it is. It's just something. You know, they are sailors, after all.
We know all about that. It's a port city. So after the first day, the afternoon, you're able to organize the shipment of your food, and it should be there in a couple of days. So it's not something that can arrive immediately, but you're successful in your purchases.
Okay. And I inform all the people who need to know.
And then Dr. Hawks was assisting you, I believe, as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Elmer, what were you doing? You were doing...
I didn't hear anybody say anything about the oxygen, so maybe I can track down the oxygen cylinders.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of places around that are welding supply companies and other... you didn't get a name. He didn't order these ahead of time, but a few hours you can wander around. You're able to find a few places. 12 tanks isn't that many. Mm-hmm. They say, that's all you need for a ship that big? What happened to the ones you have?
Yeah, I think they sprung a leak or something. I'm not a technical person, so I was just given a list to get the stuff.
Oh, why don't you just bring them, have them shipped over? We'll refill them.
Okay, I will try to do that.
All right, yeah, ship them over. We have them refilled back to you within 12 tanks. Do 2 an hour. We can have them back to you the next day.
Okay.
Gives you a price and assumes that the bill was paid by the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent.
Is that, right. You said welding? I thought it was like oxygen for breathing.
It is, but it's a welding supply shop. They have, they fill up, they have a pump.
Yeah. I thought it'd be like hospital or something.
Like a compressor, sorry. They can do, well, they have access to all kinds of welding supplies and also chemicals, so that they're more of a, like a hardware store for gases.
Mm-hmm. You know what else, too? Could I buy a pair of nice winter sunglasses?
Huh. Strange.
Do we even have sunglasses yet? Yes, we.
I don't know. When were there were sunglasses in the 1800s, weren't they? Smoked glass.
Yeah. Hmm? Yeah. Maybe the welding supply.
If we don't weld anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe like the welding supply would have the welding.
In old movies, whenever you see people in the snow or the Arctic condition, they have those little snow blinder glasses that keep, you know, everything is real, just a slit.
Inuit snow.
It'd be part of the standard equipment, I should imagine, wouldn't it?
It would be, yes. There's certainly something that the Inuit would have about the slit between the bone that they would wear across the head that you could see. Mm-hmm.
Although in our polar survival classes, we would be taught how to make an improvised one using anything you could get, like a bit of leather or a bit of cardboard or anything you can get your hands on, and just making two crosses. And that's the survival version.
Earlier, Simon wasn't here. You were going to say something to Sparky.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes, sorry. Sparky, you are going to get the electrical...
Yeah, I'll take care of the radio stuff. Yeah.
Okay. The staff at this electrical outfitting company, they're friendly, competent, and they did order six radio receiving sets, or sorry, transceiving sets ahead of time. They're processed and in crates and ready to go.
Excellent service. Can they deliver?
They're ready to go. They're ready. They can certainly get them on a truck and have them over to the ship in less than an hour.
Should do that. So I'll get everything loaded up, make sure it gets back to the ship and loaded up and put in the right place.
Great. The next one on your list, however, is a different location. It's a little ways out. It's in Richmond, and it's Peasley Power. It's a taxi ride away, and that's where you're supposed to get your generators.
Okay, I shall get a truck arranged and go there.
All right, you get there, and the yard manager says, "Hey, we got the order from the Gabriel from the radio. We got radioed in.
Excellent.
They're crated, ready to go.
Excellent service.
Right. Six units, ready as you please. Right. All tied up with bows on for you.
I'll give them the payment details. And again, get it back to the ship and see about it getting loaded up.
All right. He's got a manifest for you to, or not a manifest, a bill of lading for you to sign off on. And it says six units generating 150 watts each.
Right, okay. As long as everything adds up to what's on the paperwork I sign.
Oh, you're going to compare it to your existing manifest?
Yeah.
Oh, you're supposed to get three 300 watt units.
Right, okay. Make the changes. Can I do that?
The yard manager says, this is what was ordered. I've got the transcript of the order right here.
Six. At least we changed that. I'll take everything back, but I say, how long are you talking about for getting the rest of it sorted?
He says, you guys are going to have to pay a fee for this, for returning them, and pay the truck driver. And
yeah,
I don't have any 300 watt generators. You're going to have to go somewhere else.
Any recommendations?
No. Not recommending a competitor.
Well, they're not competitive if you don't supply them.
Well, these are perfectly good. Why can't you use two generators instead of one?
Well, I'll get in contact with the ship and let them know. And if I find out a result, I'll come back and let you know that.
All right, you do that, but I'm still going to charge you guys.
I didn't say that wasn't a possibility. I'll contact the ship and say what I say.
Well, Mr. Starkweather gets on the radio. Maybe you're going to have to, you're going to have to phone them or whatever. I guess there's not really a landline going to the ship. Your message gets to the ship. The message comes back from the ship. Mr. Starkweather says some choice words and says, "We need those 300 watt generators. What the hell's wrong with those guys?"
He's insulted.
Well, when you actually saw the radio transcript that came in from the telegraph, it actually said, six 150 watt generators. So,
yeah,
Starkweather ordered the wrong. Yeah, well, you don't know that it came from Mr. Starkweather directly, but whoever radioed it in, and it wasn't you, Sparky, whoever radioed it in, radioed exactly.
Probably Robert is the ship's, radio operator, Robert, so I should imagine it was him. Yep. Oh, if he isn't going to do it, I'm just going to have to find somewhere where I can get them.
Do you want to make a spa roll? Idea roll? Sorry.
An idea. Easy. 34 out of 65.
You saw around back from that first electrical place you were at that they had some generators in storage that might be large enough to suit your needs.
Okay, I shall go back and look into that matter and see if I can get a good price from Ben.
They say you're back. We've shipped the equipment. Is there anything wrong with it?
We need generators.
What do you need?
I shall go over the details of what I need.
300-watt generators. I got 6 of them out back. You need 3?
Yeah, no, that'd be perfect. If you could put them on and add them to the manifest.
They got to be, I got to prime them, like go in and make sure that they're ready for use, but we can ship them over, say, tomorrow morning.
That'd be perfect. I'll make sure you get mentioned as well for a nice bit of advertising.
Where did you go? Did you go somewhere else before?
Yeah, I turned the company.
They're jackasses. You should never go to them.
Yeah. Well, we've got some of our business, but not all of it. You make the most money. Right. When I get back to the ship, I'll let Starkweather know about this shop and how helpful it is, and if he can give him a mention next time he does a press brief about how helpful this place was.
Nice. Oh, we'll see what we can figure out. Thank you very much. Well,
any problems? Yeah, a little payback for them being helpful.
Yeah. Well, he mumbles a bit and takes a look at the manifest and looks at the order and goes, And then it goes back to his business because he doesn't seem too concerned as long as he's getting what he wants. Okay. Captain Thugvin, everyone else is finished. You're supposed to arrange for the delivery of 5 tons of pemmican.
5 tons of pemmican.
Oh, so you go to RJ Manfield & Son in Braybrook. You have to take a cab to get there.
Okay.
You arrive. It's a low, large industrial brick building that's... It's a peach cannery when you get there.
Uh-huh.
there's a door and there's an office.
Well, in that case, a rat-a-tat-tat on the office door.
Fella comes around the corner with a broom. Says, "Yes, sir, can I help you?"
Is this Manfield's?
Yes, yes. Points up.
Ah.
Yes.
Peach cannery.
Yeah, that's what we do.
I think there might have been some confusion here. I was sent here to purchase 5 tons of pemmican.
Pemmican?
Pemmican.
What the hell's pemmican?
It's dried ground beef mixed with... fat.
Sounds disgusting.
Well, you know, it's survival food, dog food, that kind of thing. Expedition supplies.
Let me get the foreman. We're shut down. We're doing repairs right now, just at the beginning of the new season, because, you know, it's winter. No peaches in the winter. Just let me go get the foreman. He wanders off. You hear some mumbling and laughing in the hallway. A lot of Australian words you can't understand. And they come out. They start speaking English again. And the foreman says, "What the hell is pemmican?"
I'll explain pemmican. Again.
He says, "That sounds disgusting."
Well, the Indians swore by it. "What the bloody hell's this?" they'd say.
Oh, we don't have any order for pemmican.
You don't have we were told to come and get it here. Now look, right then. I know this is gonna sound like a silly question. But if a chap turned up in Melbourne and wanted to avail himself of 2.5 tons of dried beef and 2.5 tons of fat, where would he go? I mean, is there a rendering plant?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, it's a big city. Let me call Mr. Manfield, the owner.
Jolly
he gets
good.
On the phone, he calls up Roger Manfield Jr. He's the RJ and RJ Manfield and Sons. Mr. Manfield, the same kind of conversation happens. What the hell's pemmican? He doesn't know about an order. And he says that he was never contacted, never received an order. But he's delighted at the chance to help you in any way he can because he's very excited at the expedition. At the news of the expedition is, you know, everyone in the town is hearing about it. So he says, what can we do to help? How can we assist you with this?
Well, I mean, in order to make 5 tons of pemmican, to make pemmican, you need basically a 50-50 blend of... You need 50% dried meat, which is then ground very fine and mixed with an equal proportion of refined fat, tallow, mm-hmm. which then hardens around it. And it's the hardening of the fat, the fat seals in the freshness of the meat and allows it to keep for as long as it does indefinitely, I'm told. Now, I mean, obviously, if you could manage to source some sort of source of the dried meat, some kind of process to grind it, and similar deal with the tallow, then we would be happy to reimburse you.
Well, and you took the Arctic Survival Course, right?
Yes.
Well, you know that it also there's a requirement for molasses, and they use cod liver oil to supplement the fat to add to the vitamin content. Okay. And there's a few other basic ingredients to it. He says, we can get all of that here, but we don't have any staff. Everyone's off on holiday. This is not a time of year we can pull them in. They work hard. They're coming back in a few weeks, and they've all been, you know, essentially, they come back, but they're not here right now.
How many men do you think you'd need?
Can you get 12 people?
I think I can, possibly, yes.
He says, if you can't find 12, you can always hire people off the street. There's always people looking for work.
Well, 1933, yes, of course there is, yes.
He does a bit of, you know, calculations. He says, I can get this from here. And he names it off some locations. He says, I've got the equipment for the grinding, got the freezers. It's just going to take, he says, well, something that thick and dense. He says, essentially, if you can find 12 people to do the mixing, the packaging, because each piece has to be packaged in 1-pound blocks with paper. They can get the paper, they can get all the ingredients, and they can arrange to have this if you can supply 12 people, and they will 3 days total to have all this
all right.
put together.
You get started on the on sourcing the material. I'll go and find you a dozen men.
He's on. He says, thank you very much. Happy to help out with the expedition.
Right. Nice to I'm meet heading. You. Yes. Good stuff.
I don't know if I'm going to eat stuff. I might not try it. But.
Well, you know, keep a bit back. It keeps for a long time, I'm told. And the dogs like it. I'm going to immediately rush out into the street, hail a cab, and head straight back to the ship.
All right. You're back there. This is only halfway through the first day. So you're noon. You're back at the ship.
Okay. Right. Well, I'm going to now. Who would I talk to about seconding members of the crew? We were told that we could have members of the crew to help us with loading things and sourcing stuff.
Bosun.
Right. I'm going to go and see the bosun and explain the situation to him and say, look, I went to this plant, this place I was given to get the pemmican, and it turns out it's a peach cannery. But I had a chat with them. This time of year is slow for them. It's the end of winter. They haven't got any peaches to can. They've got all the equipment they need. They've got a line on supplies of dried meat and tallow, molasses, and other things. They've got everything they need to produce 5 tons of pemmican for us. They can do it in 3 days. The only thing they're lacking is manpower. I need a dozen men. Can you spare me a dozen men?
No.
How many men can you spare me?
None.
That's not good enough. I need a few.
He explains that after such a long voyage, they have an agreement with the crew, that they get shore leave. They have some shifts on the ship and shore leave. Right. And it's due to the morale of the crew, they absolutely have to grant this, especially given the fact that you're traveling to the Antarctic and they're going to be there for an unknown amount of time. So he will not...
Okay, that's fair enough.
Okay.
That's fair enough. If that's the way things are, I will pursue another option. I'm going to go and find some form of labor exchange.
There is. There's a manpower type. I don't know if they call it that. Labor exchange. Yes.
Okay.
Labor exchange. That's what we'll call it. There's a labor.
I'll go and talk to the man who runs it, Craig, and ask him if he's got how many men he's got on his list.
Oh, there's a guy. The guy you're directed to. He's an agent. There's 3 of them in there, and his name is Bruce.
Good day, Bruce. See, I speak the local language. Yes, right. I'm looking for a dozen able-bodied men for 3 days' work.
What kind of work?
It's producing and mixing, producing, and packing pemmican. I will then explain to him what pemmican is.
He does say it sounds disgusting. He does have some laborers who happens to have some laborers who work at the local peach cannery during the summer months.
Aha. Now, look, right.
Yes, 6 of them.
I'm sure you understand. I have to, you have 6 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And look, I have to go back and talk to my expedition leader about this. Can you give me a figure? For wages, how much
are we expecting? Reasonable fee.
Okay, I will double.
The factory is a nominal fee as well. It's not.
Okay, I'll Okay, so I've got a fee for the factory, a fee for half a dozen men. I'm going to double that figure because I'm going to need a dozen men wherever I get them from. So that's going to be my budget. Look, I'll be back very shortly. I've just got to okay this, re the wages. If you can put things on hold briefly, I will be back, ASAP, tickety boo. And, I shall go, back to the ship, explain the situation to Starkweather.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Moore.
I'll explain the situation to Mr. Moore. So that this is the situation. We're going to have to manufacture the pemmican ourselves. To be quite honest with you, the process of manufacturing it's if anything slightly cheaper than buying 5 tons of pemmican. We're buying in there, but getting the equipment for wholesale, getting the supplies for wholesale. Then we're employing a dozen men and paying for a bit of factory time to manufacture it. They've given us a 3-day window. I've got half a dozen men lined up already. I've just got to go and find another half dozen men. All I need is for you to okay the wage bill, and okay, then I'll go off and see to it. Then I'm back to the manpower bureau. I'll okay the half a dozen men they've got me there, and I'll go in search of another half a dozen men.
All right.
Well, I'll take my start walking stick just in case I have to press gang.
All right, it's easy enough. You can find six more men. So. Shanghai them.
Yes.
All right. So shall we call it then, Tom?
Sounds like a good spot.
Okay.
God, I hope this is sanitary.
Hey, Cobber, want to make some meat? Oh, yeah. I'll make some meat for you, mate.
All right, folks. Our players included Greg Malcolm, Nick Swan, Simon Ward, Jeff Wilkins, and myself, with Sean Little as the Keeper of the Secrets. Our musical intro, Sleight of Hand, was composed by James Brett and is used with his permission. If you'd like to help us out a bit financially, we have a Patreon account. Just a dollar or two a month will help us out a lot. We're currently producing four shows a week with music and sound effects added in post-production in order to create a richer listening experience. We provide audio-only versions of our show free for you to download from Podbean or iTunes. Like, share, and subscribe to our channel for updates on related shows, and leave us some comments. We love hearing from you. You'll find links to everything I mentioned in the description below. This is Tom Rayleigh, together with all of the members of our gaming group, inviting you to journey with us once again into the darkness for another adventure into the universe of H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Until next time, good luck, good gaming.